The Gemara says, bringing a pasuk in the Torah, pasuk says, "Vechibadeto le'asot berachecha." Honor Hashem that Shabbat should be different than the rest of the week. How do we fulfill this mitzvah of honoring Hashem? The Gemara says, "Kavod means the garment of a person's clothes." Because Rabbi Yochanan said, "The clothes of a person are those that honor him." For example, how do you recognize a king? How does a king differ from an ordinary person? Because of the fact he wears royal robe, a crown. So therefore, the clothes of a person are called his kavod. This pasuk therefore implies that you must show kavod to Shabbat by the clothes you wear. A Jew should have special clothes for Shabbat that are different than his weekday clothes. The Ria Kadosh said that this applies to every garment. But Ezal never wore the same garment on Shabbat as he did for the weekday. Special garments that were worn only on Shabbat. In fact, the ones he wore were all white, pure white. But in addition to, any garment means even the talit. It is better for a person to have a separate talit for Shabbat than for the weekday. So that either the talit he wears, it should be recognized as a beged, talit of Shabbat. Secondly, the Gemara says, not only should the clothes be different, but the speech of a person, the words of a person, the Shabbat should be different than his words during the week, which means that it is forbidden for a Jew to speak on Shabbat words of business or words that are spoken during the weekdays. And from this we see that when we say work is forbidden on Shabbat, we include speech too. Speaking is considered work too. It is an act of the weekdays, an act that is not Kodesh. Shabbat is called Shabbat Kodesh, and therefore the words of Shabbat must be only Fikdusha. Words of Torah, words of Tefillah, words of holiness, words that if they are spoken on the weekdays, pertaining to business, to politics, to social life, they should be avoided on Shabbat. The Zohar HaKadosh says that Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai saw his own mother speaking on Shabbat socially. He said to her, "Mother, be silent. It is Shabbat today." This was not meant, Pastor Shalom, as disrespect. Meant only to teach us. He said it not for her sake, but for our sake, for the sake of the students. You know how serious it is to Pastor Shalom defile, desecrate the Shabbat with the wrong type of word. Third, the Gemara says that your manner of walking on Shabbat should be different than that during the week. Now, this is something which the Gemara means to say, referring to it as a sin. You're not allowed to take a big step on Shabbat. Big step means a wide step. Although, the Gemara teaches us taking a wide step even in the weekdays is forbidden, because if you take a long step, extra long step, it affects the eyesight of a person. A long step, the Gemara says, takes away 1/500 of a person's eyesight. How come there are people who walk, take long steps during the week, and yet after months and years their eyesight is not affected? The answer is that the cure for the harm to the eyesight is affected by the Kiddush and the Havdalah on Shabbat. Especially the Kiddush, the person saying Kiddush looks at the candle light on Shabbat. This is the greatest cure for a person's eyesight. And that during Kiddush is that you look at the candle while you say Vayechulu Hashemayim V'Haaretz. There are 35 words in that paragraph. And then you turn to the wine. You look at the wine, the rest of the Kiddush. There are 35 words in the rest of the Kiddush too. 35 and 35 makes a total of 70 words. 70 in Hebrew is ayin. The letter ayin is 70. The word ayin is I. It means that the I cured by looking at the candles during the kiddush. Saying the kiddush is the one that cures the harm that is done to the eyesight during the week. So this is a matter of sakanah, of physical harm. On Shabbat, in addition to this, there is also an isur, it is a sin, to take a big step on Shabbat. However, the Yerida tells us that going to Knis, going to Bet Midrash, selling, Davin wants to learn Torah, then, on the contrary, it is a mitzvah to run. To run to take a big step, because no longer is there the sin of taking a big step, for one thing, and no longer is there a sakana, because going to a place of Midrash, a person can be assured that no harm can come from doing the mitzvah. Since he's doing a mitzvah and running to Knis to learn Torah, then he cannot be harmed in the act of doing a mitzvah. Therefore, the going to Knis, even on Shabbat, removes both the sakana and the isur of taking a big step. Even if at the same time, it's an entirely different topic, but it's brought together, that a person should eat from the earth of Bavel. Bavel is erect. So how does a person eat from that earth? A person would say who would take a fruit, he wouldn't brush off some of the earth. It is as though the person is eating part of the flesh of his body of his forefathers. And others say it is as though he is eating worms or rodents. Why is this? For one thing, in the time of the flood, the lowest level of all was Bavel. So that all bodies that died in the flood were swept into the area of Bavel, and there they were drawn, sucked into the earth, they became part of the earth. So that practically the entire earth now is made up of these bodies. But this is only in reference to the rodents. We cannot say these are his forefathers. They are not, because those that died during the flood were not our forefathers. We are all descendants of Noah, the three sons, who lived during the flood. So, therefore, the Gemara says that one who eats from the earth of Bavel, it is as though he eats from the earth from the flesh of his forefathers, because this refers to something that can be shared, it says. Jews were sent into exile in Bavel, and there all the burials took place. There were so many who passed away there, the earth became filled with these bodies. Why don't we say that a person who eats from the earth of Eretz Yisrael is eating from the earth of his forefathers? That too is filled with bodies of so many hundreds or thousands of years of people buried there. The answer is that Eretz Yisrael, at all times there was stress made to mark off graves, cemeteries, and this is called Tiyun Kivarot, mark off the graves of those who are buried. And that's why to this day the probability of finding bodies, areas that are not marked off, are ever so slight. We cannot say eating from the earth of any Israel contains the danger of eating from people who are buried there. This, of course, stresses the point that Bavel, in general, is a very low type of land. It's low as far as sea level, it's low as far as the earth itself, land of Tum'ah, obviously compared to Eretz Yisrael, where the earth is holy, sacred. How great of that it is for a person who passes away, is buried and becomes part of this sacred earth, sacred soil. Yemena says that Rachot, blessings we say, over various items, any type of food, though these blessings all contain the name of Hashem in them, still, if a fire should break out on Shabbat, it is forbidden to rescue the pages upon which these blessings are written. There is a law that Torah, for example, may be saved. You have Chumashim, Sifrei Torah, you can save them in case of fire. But pages on which are written these blessings alone, they are not holy enough to be saved in case of fire. Which means that after Shalom, you don't save them, and fire consumes the words, including after Shalom, the name of Hashem. Therefore, the Gemara says, how sinful it is for a person to write out these blessings on paper, because of what may happen to them. This, of course, raises a big question about questioners. We should like to condemn, of course, that we're not supposed to find fault with others. But there's a question how some of these organizations, the holidays, and especially, print up little cardboard papers and pages with either brachot for the candle lighting, Hanukkah, or other types of brachot, and they mail it out. Most cases, of course, they do it in a way where they do not write out, they do not spell out Hashem's name. So you haven't got that danger. There are some places that are ignorant, and in fact, they do it. And there is, of course, the risk of having these pages being discarded, thrown into the wastebasket, Pastor Shalom, defiling the word of Kiddushah. Still, the Gemara says that it is forbidden for a person to write these brachot down on paper. If they do so, it is as though they are burning, Pastor Shalom, these holy words. The Gemara tells a story of one person, a city in Israel, who wrote these brachot down on paper, and people came and told Rabbi Ishmael about this. Ishmael was upset. He went to investigate, examine this person. While he was going up the steps to this person's home, the person became aware of the fact that Ishmael was coming. He quickly took the packet, papers and pages, and he put it into a pitcher of water. That water would automatically erase what was written on it. Ishmael came, caught him in his act, and he said to him, punishment, the second act is much greater than the punishment for the first act. Writing the words down was a sin, was wrong. There's a smaller punishment for it. Taking these pages, deliberately putting it into a water, that shall erase the name of Hashem, it's a much greater sin. And this, of course, is something that happens often, unintentionally. A person does something wrong by accident, and then when he realizes he did it, he tries to undo it, and in undoing it, he can do something much worse. A person puts on a light on Shabbat by accident, and then he sees what he's done. Without thinking, he quickly puts it out. Now, the first act was a pure accident. The second one, knowing a Shabbat, or reminding himself of Shabbat, do it then. That's practically doing it deliberately. So there's a case where the second act can be worse than the first. Why a person should always keep his senses about it, never to allow himself to lose his mind in a case of emergency like that. The Gemara says that in the Chumash, in Bamidbar, the Halotcha, we find a chapter in the Chumash, Parasha, consisting of the two sentences, Vayhi bin So'ah Aaron, the Yom Moshe, telling us about the fact that when the Aaron Kodesh was moved during the travel of the Jews in the desert, Moshe Rabbeinu said special words of praise to Hashem. This paragraph has just two sentences in it. What is unusual about this is that in the Sefer Torah, we find that preceding the paragraph, there is a nun, the letter nun, written backwards, the opposite way. At the end of these two sentences, the end of this chapter, this paragraph, there's another letter nun again written backwards. This is called a nun hafuch, opposite nun. The two nun that are opposite. You better bring up this question as to why these two nunin hafuchim. Yemeneh says this teaches us that this paragraph does not belong in this part. It belongs in the story of the Jews traveling in the desert. Why is it placed here? Because we have at this point two bad stories about things that happened when the Jews did things that were wrong. In order not to have two evil acts, so that places this chapter now separate the two. And the Nun, written backwards, implies that, in general, the letter Nun stands for Nefilah. falling down. For example, the Gemara says that in the Ashrei Asher Techa, that chapter of David, which we say in spelling every day, you have the Aleph Bet. Every chapter is referred to the Aleph Bet. Every letter is there except the letter Nun. Why? Because the letter Nun stands for the Tefillah, for falling, the Tefillah omits that. So that only includes it hiddenly, the hint, by letter Samach, the letter after the Nun, it says, Sameach Hashem Lachar North Lid. Hashem supports those who are fallen. We have that Nun there hiddenly. The idea that Nun is bad, falling, and to receive support, that's the, you look forward to the help of Hashem receiving support. Therefore, here too, though these bad things happen, we have the Nun, the beginning, Nun at the end, show us that the Nun is turned over, an opposite Nun, to show that the Tefillah, the fall, will be turned over into an elevation by Hashem. And Yehuda HaNasi, known as Rebbe, says this is not the reason. He tells us that an unusual chidush is, a fantastic chidush. We know that there are five, we accept there are five chumashim, known as the five books of Moshe Rabbeinu. Whenever a person is asked how many chumashim are there, chumash means five, except. Rebbe says that there are not five chumashim, there are actually seven. Seven chumashim, that this chapter itself, this one paragraph, is a chumash in itself. It is so valuable, it's so precious, a chapter, that it is equivalent to an entire chumash. Therefore, since this chapter is in the middle of the chumash Bamidbar, you now have this chumash divided into three parts. The part Bamidbar before the Hebrew saw Harun, I even saw Haron itself, and then the part that follows that chapter. You have three of that one sifter. But the other four chumashim, the Yeshiv, Shemot, Yikra, and Devarim, that make a total of seven. Then the Yudan Asi says there are actually seven chumashim and not five. The reason for the Nun, the two Nuns in this chapter is, the Nun stands for 50. Nun is a letter that we met the 50. 50 degrees of wisdom is the highest possible degree. And that means the Torah itself. That this chapter 2 is one that is of the 50th degree of wisdom, just as the rest of the Torah. Why is the Nun turned backwards? Why is it hapuch? Show us that no person can get to this Nun. And even in this very chapter that is so small, you have Moshe Rabbeinu's name. Even so, Aaron, the younger Moshe. Show us that in this chapter you have Moshe Rabbeinu's name. And he too only reached the 49th degree of wisdom. The Nun is turned over to show us no one can reach the 50th degree. No one else. Ordinary life, regular tzaddikim, except of course the Moach Nun. Now again, we go back to the case of writing Hashem's name. Rebbe says that we spoke before about writing Barachot with Hashem's name on them. How about the Torah itself? A Chumash, which is the Torah, or even a Sefer Torah, which we say on Shabbat if there is a fire, then it is a mitzvah to save it. Save the Sefer Torah from being burned. But think about it, sir. If this Sefer Torah is written by an apikores, by one who does not believe in the Torah, which means he does not believe in the Gemara, he does not believe the Gemara is the word of Hashem, then we do not save this in case of a fire. Let it burn. Same words of the Sefer Torah, not one word added, not one word subtracted. With the names of Hashem written out, all four letters written out clearly. Yet since it is written by an apikores, it does not have any kedusha at all. This is one rabbi. Second rabbi says, swearing by the life of his children to show how intensely he makes this statement. He said, I would not wait for a fire on Shabbat to let it burn. If I get hold of one of these sefarim written by these apikoresim, I would take it myself, and I would put it into the fire and destroy it, but the fire consume it with the names that I shed in. Why? Because if a person is fleeing from someone who is trying to kill him, or fleeing from a poisonous snake, and he has no way out but to run into a non-Jewish place of worship to save himself, he may do that. But he cannot run into a temple of these apikoresim. They are worse than a non-Jewish place of worship. Why? Because the non-Jewish people or places are ones who are kofrim. They do not believe. But that's because they don't know. They don't recognize the Torah as a Jew does. These apikoresim learn Torah, recognize Torah, and still they are kofrim. Still they refuse to accept the Torah. Therefore, they are worse than the worst pagans. So that's why it's the words they write, the words of Torah they write, have no value of kedusha whatsoever. And if they didn't use their words of Torah, that is words that are exactly the same that we have in a Sefer Torah kedusha. Imagine then the kosher gate, how much more so it is forbidden to read books written by these apikoresim, these philosophers, their own words, their own criminal statements of kibbutz, how sinful it is to read these books written by them. And this is speaking about Jews, Jewish kofrim. We can understand the danger in tum'ah of philosophy here. The Gemara says that in a certain neighborhood of Rabbi Gamliel. Gamliel was the chief rabbi of the Jews, the Nasi of the Sanhedrin.
He was the brother of Ima Shalom, the wife of Rabbi Eliezer Hagadol.
Eliezer Hagadol, he said, Tachanun, Anna, Gamliel's life was in danger. Because in that tefillah, a person prays for the downfall of his enemy.
Rabbi Gamliel's sister, the wife of Rabbi Eliezer Hagadol, watched over him.
Stop him from saying. One day, she couldn't stop him. A poor man came to the door. She went to answer the door. She came back. She found
her husband was saying it. And she said to him, "You have just killed my brother."
True, at that moment, Leo had a mistake. So, this, of course, is nothing not related to that story. But it tells us about the case of Rabbi Gamliel
and his sister
to a certain philosopher. They were living in a time when the Romans had more power over the land of Israel, that they were forced at times to be guided by the rules of these Roman judges. There was a judge, a philosopher there, who was known, he had let it be known, that is, publicize the fact that he never accepts grants. There are no conditions to accept grants. I mean, Leo knew that this philosopher was tameh throughout. It meant that certainly he would take grants. So, they arranged a trick.
His sister
came to this philosopher and said, our parents passed away, and the question is, do I receive a part of the inheritance equal to my brother?
Referring to Rabbi Gamliel.
My brother. She said to this philosopher, I have here a candelabra of pure gold. This is just a gift. The philosopher answered her. He said, it is written that if he answered you, you may receive half. you can divide equally with your brother. And Leah asked him, the Torah tells us, the law, that where there is a son, a daughter receives no inheritance at all. Why do you say that she can receive half? The philosopher answered, the day that the Jews went into Galut, then there is a new set of laws, new rules. This new set of laws says that the son and daughter shall share equally. The next day, Leah went, came to him and said, I have a special mule, very expensive mule. This was more expensive than the candelabra of gold. He said, what do you say now? The philosopher said, well, I didn't finish my sentence yesterday. A new book of rules written, which says that son and daughter share equally. But this is only for the non-Jews. And the Jews, law is, the rule still remains that a daughter cannot inherit the place of a son. This was done in open court.
So Rabbi Eliel's sister said to him,
wisdom shines like a candelabra, hinting at the fact that she had brought him a candelabra as grass. Rabbi Eliel said to him, but a mule came and kicked the candelabra, put the light out. The candelabra, meaning to say, I brought bigger grass to sway his opinion
over the lesser amount that his sister had brought.
Pointed out, though, of course, that they did not, Chas v'Shalom, bring this actually. They only promised him this amount. Now they backed out, they vetoed the deal because of the fact that they proved publicly that this philosopher was a graft taker. Again, this proves how the Gemara stresses the poison of philosophy and philosophers, that there is no good whatsoever in them at all. Besides the evil of their philosophy, they themselves, the character, are evil. A person should stay remotely as possible away from philosophers and philosophy. That way he'll be solid in Emunah in Torah. He later discusses the meals that a person is obligated to eat on Shabbat. You know that during the week, a person may eat a meal or may not. Up to himself. If he misses a meal, there is no sin. On Shabbat, though, there is a chiyuv. He is obligated to eat a certain number of meals. The question is, how large is that number? There is a machloket, a debate between the rabbis and the chachamim and Rabbi Chidka. Very important name to remember. The chachamim say that a person must eat three meals on Shabbat. One Friday night, and two others on Shabbat. Chidka says a person must eat a total of four meals, one Friday night and three more on Shabbat. And what does the machloket consist of? Because we find in the Pasuk that Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Jews, in reference to the man, the heavenly food, on Friday, on Shabbat he said, eat the man you have today, because today you will not find this man in the field. Today is Shabbat. Now the word today, the Yemen says, refers to the meal that a person is supposed to eat. How many times does it say the word today in the Pasuk? Three times. Therefore the Chachamim say, since it says the word Hayom three times in the Pasuk, therefore you must eat three meals for the honor of the day. A total of three meals. The Chidka says, yes, certainly. But we also translate the day as day, which means three meals during the day, aside from the meal of Friday night, as the Shabbat enters. So, this law, of course, remains like the Chachamim, which means that the person is obligated, if we have, to eat three meals on Shabbat, three regular meals. It means he must have lechem mishneh, two chalot at each meal, Friday night, Shabbat in the morning after Sali, and for Shalosh Sudot. There are some people, though they are not required to, there are some, for the sake of fulfilling the words of Rabbi Chidka, they eat a fourth meal. They call it the Suda, the meal of Rabbi Chidka. This, of course, is not a requirement, just that some feel that since it is a mitzvah to eat on Shabbat anyhow, eat a lot, because every bit of food a person eats on Shabbat goes into Kiddusha. It is holy. That's why it's a mitzvah to eat more than usual on Shabbat, besides the additional meal, to eat more than the person's regular habits. There's no harm in coming in. Although, of course, the Gemara says that generally, those who eat very little during the week, and on Shabbat they eat a lot, generally, after Shabbat, they feel sort of ill. They have stomach trouble because of this. Yet this has nothing to do with the spiritual purity that comes to a person through this food. Ordinarily, a person eating can have the food turn to harm for the neshama too. Many reasons, according to Kabbalah. The tikkun, correction, new bits of life, parts of life, a real limit are found in the food. If not done properly, can do harm to a person. This is during the week. On Shabbat, no harm can come from his eating the food, because every bit he eats is a mitzvah. And that's why a person should accustom himself to eating more on Shabbat than during the week. In addition, the Gemara says that since we have this law, this mitzvah of eating three meals on Shabbat, we should be aware of the fact that a person who eats these three meals receives a special reward, special schar for it, besides the mitzvah of the three meals itself. First of all, a person fulfills this mitzvah completely, eating three meals every Shabbat, he is assured that he will be saved from the suffering that will come prior to Mashiach coming. Mashiach comes, it's like the birth of a nation. And there are always the birth pains. The nation must go through pains. It's called Chevlei Mashiach. The person who eats these three meals on Shabbat regularly will be spared the suffering of the Chevlei Mashiach. Secondly, the person will be spared too from the punishment of Gehinnom, certain types of punishment that everyone must suffer. This Din of Gehinnom will be saved from through the eating of these three meals. Third, too, we have before Mashiach the war of Gog and Magog, and this too, which entails a lot of suffering and bloodshed, those who will partake of the Shalosh Sudot regularly will not be included in the suffering of the war of Gog and Magog. So great is the mitzvah of eating the Shalosh Sudot on Shabbat. These that a person should not be little chesed shalom any one of these three meals. Third Sudah should be considered as important as the first two. It should not be regarded as a minor meal where you cover it with just a piece of cake or fruit. Though there are some opinions in Shulchan Aruch say that it is permissible, a person should dress in the fat of eating the third Sudah just as he does the other two. Yemena says that the mitzvah of obeying Shabbat is so great that if one obeys Shabbat in its entirety, being careful not to break any one of the acts of Shabbat in any form, then even if that person is the worst sinner on earth, which means that even if he worships idols, the mitzvah of Shabbat is so great that it will help to forgive him for this sin. Even the sin of idol worship is forgiven to one who observes the Shabbat. The Gemara says that when Hashem gave the mitzvah of Shabbat to the Jews, the city of Melech, if on that first Shabbat all the Jews then would have observed the Shabbat perfectly, then there would never have come a time that any nation could do harm to the Jews if they had just observe that one Shabbat. This we learn from the Pasuk, which says that on that Shabbat, when they were told not to go out to gather the man, some people did go out to gather the man. Immediately after, we find that they were attacked by the tribe of Amalek. Shows us this is the reason why they are attacked by other nations. Had they observed this first Shabbat, they would not have had the attack by Amalek, and they would never again have had the risk of being attacked or ruled by any nation on earth. Now the Gemara says that Yeshua Meir Chayyim said henceforth, there comes a time that the entire nation of Jews will observe carefully, perfectly, two Shabbat in a row, according to Halachot Shabbat, they will immediately realize the Geulah Shvayna, Mashiach will come, if they keep two Shabbat in a row. We find that the Yerushalmi, the Gemara says, if they observe only one Shabbat, Jews keep one Shabbat, they would be saved immediately. Is there a discrepancy? Is there a machlokes between the two? The answer is that the Rishonim Chayezal is saying the Jews, in keeping one Shabbat, would have Mashiach come. They must have two Shabbat now. One, in order to erase the sin of not having kept the first Shabbat, when they were told, that would erase that sin. Then they need a second one to cover for the mitzvah of obeying Shabbat in order to have Mashiach come immediately. So great is the mitzvah of Shabbat that the Geulah Shleimah, the Biyat HaMashiach, is dependent upon this mitzvah of Shemitah Shabbat. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yossi, one of the great rabbis of the Gemara, said, it's sort of a prayer, may it be my lot, I shall be zocheh, to be among those who eat Shalosh Sudot every Shabbat, three meals of Shabbat. Of course, this means, naturally, he ate three meals every Shabbat. Understood? Every good Jew does. But he said it for two reasons. One, as an ivut, modesty, and he's hoping to be zocher to this. The second, to arouse his students, followers, later generations, to the importance of it. Considering it something you pray for, to be zocher to, with this he would inspire people to eat Shalosh Sudot. He said a number of other things too. These same words, may it be my lot, he said, to be zocher, to pray, to daven, shachrit, with sunrise, the moment of sunrise, which is called Vatikin. Now, this means too that just as a person eats the motion of Shabbat, it should be as simple for him to sell each day, but he can. He also said that not just the selling shachrit with batikin, just as the sun rises, but the selling minchah too, just before the sun sets. There are different times of selling minchah. There's the minchah gedolah, which means at 12:30 or at 1:30 daylight savings time. That's the Minchah Gedolah, and that's not the real mitzvah. The real mitzvah is the Soli, at least after 3:30, Minchah Ketanah. But from 3:30 until sunset, Yossi tells us that during that period of time, the best time is just before sunset. That's the best time, just as Shachrit is just at the point of sunrise. Yossi also said, prayer, may I be zochet to be among those who die of stomach ailment, the trouble with digestion. What is the chidush? The Gemara says the majority of tzaddikim die because of intestinal trouble, intestinal ailments, intestinal diseases. Now, the chidush here is that we would think that a person should wish to avoid this. After all, with intestinal ailment, sometimes a person couldn't put on tefillin. He's not clean. Masali. Despite this, Rabbi Yossi said that there is something more important than that, and that is that the reason why tzaddikim die of intestinal ailment is so that their stomachs are cleaned out completely from any food, any type of earthly nourishment, means that there is less for the worms to partake on, to feast upon, and also they come to heaven pure. There is no food in heaven, and this is a symbol of purity for them too. Rabbi Yossi also said, may it be my lot to be among those who begin Shabbat in the city of Tiberias, and who end Shabbat in the city of Tzipori, the site of Tzifet.
Tiberias is the low valley, and it gets dark there early. Fred, Tsipori is the top of a mountain, and it gets dark very late. That to start Shabbat very early, among those who started earliest, and end Shabbat, together with those who ended at the latest time. Rabbi Yossi also said, may it be my lot to be among those who seat students in the Bet Midrash and the Yeshiva, tell them, sit down, it's time to start learning, not among those who tell them, get up, your classes are over. Time for lunch or time to leave. Rabbi Yossi also said, may be my lot to be among those who collect money in tzedakah, because one who collects for tzedakah gets a bigger mitzvah than those who give. But not my lot to divide this money among the poor, among the institutions, because then I might be suspected of being partial to one more than the other. Rather, I should avoid this suspicion. Of collecting money, but not to have to divide this money. Though that too is a big mitzvah, one knows how to divide it, still to avoid being suspected. Despite this, too, the Yossi said, it be my lot to be among those who is suspected of doing wrong when I am actually innocent. That's a very great suffering. One who is suspected innocently hurts that much more. Yet, despite this pain and hurt, the threat of being suspected of going through this is the greatest kafarah.